Now, a complete breakdown of University of Tennessee athletics from former UT coach Doug Matthews. This is Big Orange Sunday, presented by Delta Dental, online at deltadentaltn.com.
It was one of those nights last night in Lexington, Rupp Arena. Well, it looked like Rupp Arena. 86-69 Cats. The Vols now 23-2 and 11-1 in SEC play. Billy the Legend was there. He's still in Knoxville, still in Lexington. We'll get with him at the bottom of the hour and analyze the game, and we'll get Coach Barnes' thoughts also at the bottom of the hour. Good morning. Welcome in to Big Orange Sunday. We are, of course, brought to you by Delta Dental of Tennessee. Full basketball coverage again after this first segment. And on the football front, we're going to have a 22-minute church segment before we take our first commercial break. Two topics that I'm going to look at today. Number one, the makeup of the team heading into spring practice. Everybody who is on campus now, we know we have ten early enrollees. Where are they going to play? And what are the key areas and key players where, well, simply big improvement must be made if this team is going to make any jump next year? We'll look at that in full today. But first, let's take a look at the present coaching staff's areas of responsibility. This past week, Coach Jeremy Pruitt spelled out those staff assignments, and there was one significant announcement that he made with that. I mentioned last week, Derek Ansley was brought in to be the defensive coordinator at some point. I did not know it was going to be immediately. Certainly, he was going to head things up. New staff assignments, I'll get into those here in just a second as far as what titles are. But Derek Ansley not only will be the defensive coordinator, he will be calling plays during the game. At some point, we knew that Coach Pruitt was not going to call plays during the game. I think this is significant. I know it's significant, and I think it tells you a little bit about what he thinks about Derek Ansley. A couple of times in his comments, he made the comment, and I'm paraphrasing here, that if I start a sentence, Derek can probably finish it for me. They've worked together. They know this defense inside and out, as does Derek Ansley. So I think more and more we're seeing what an outstanding hire this appears to be going in. Now we'll see what we do winning ball games on that. A couple of things, though. Good move. I think great move. At some point, Coach Pruitt was going to have to be the head coach during the game. It's difficult to call a particular side of the ball game during the game because for that 60 minutes that you're playing, if you're calling plays either on offense or on defense, almost 99%, if not 100% of your attention should be on that particular side of the ball. Difficult to do when you're the head coach and have to make decisions on going forward or penalties or things like that. Coach Pruitt now can dedicate every single thing that he's doing during the game to being the head coach. Now, will he step in on the defensive side? Absolutely. I think what we'll probably see is something, and I'm sure maybe he might have talked to both these coaches. What Nick Saban does, who's also a defensive coordinator and works with the defense, and also Bill Belichick. He's a defensive coach with the Patriots and will step in and talk to the defense. So I'm sure we're going to see that. But more importantly, and I think a big step here, a little bit earlier than I thought it would be, Coach Pruitt now will be truly making the head coach's decisions. And that he was making those, but you get the point I'm trying to make. Now he can concentrate 100% on that. We're going to take a look at what that probably will entail with the rest of the staff here in just a second. Let's talk about what the assignments were. First off, we got 10 assistant coaches. I mentioned this last week. I don't say this to make light, but I say this to kind of help clarify exactly what an assistant coach's job is. We got five of the 10 staff members, assistant coaches, the ones that can coach on the field, have other titles. Jim Chaney's the offensive coordinator. Derek Ansley is the defensive coordinator. Chris Rump is the co-defensive coordinator. Kevin Scher is the special teams coordinator. And T. Martin is the assistant head coach and passing game coordinator. Will Friend, David Johnson, Brian Niedermeyer, Tracy Rocker, Chris Winkie, well, they don't have any other titles. I say this to say this. I mentioned last week, when you hear the code, now a coordinator means something. There's two people that will be calling the shots in the staff room. Not that they'll have the final say. The head coach does that. But it's your offensive coordinator and your defensive coordinator. Every other title is simply that. Just a title means absolutely nothing. Let me ask you this. What do you think an assistant head coach does? Well, I can tell you, I don't know. I was never an assistant head coach. We always had an assistant head coach. He never took over for the head coach during the game. When the head coach was out of town, he didn't run the show. It's just a title. And passing game coordinator is just a title. My question is this. We have a passing game coordinator. We don't have a running game coordinator. And we're not going to run the ball next year. So as you look at these coaches, and at this level, at the level of Tennessee, yes, you always usually have maybe one or two younger coaches you're trying to develop. But if there's one thing that I have stuck with, because I know from being there, once you get to the Tennessee level, you don't have training wheels on anymore. You're a coach. Chris Rumpf is an excellent coach. Nobody needs to tell him how to coach. If you look down the list at all of it, many of them, Tracy Rocker is an excellent coach. And I'm pretty sure the rest of them are too. The only two titles, again, that mean anything are the defensive coordinator and the offensive coordinator. And that is where we start with this staff, because Coach Pruitt has brought on two men. One he knows exceptionally well from working with him in Derek Ansley, and Jim Chaney. They're in charge of their respective staffs. I think these are big moves for Tennessee. Now, this past Monday, the staff, the assistant coach's staff, and some, and also the head coach, they switched from an intense recruiting mode to a player development mode this past Monday. National signing date was a week ago Wednesday. Had a little celebration group around for some of the coaches, and then took a few days off. But this past Monday, when they come in, now recruiting is still important. You're going to be recruiting for 2020. But right now, it's all about development for the fall of 2019. You know who many of your players are going to be. You got 10 early enrollees. And it's player development right now. It is getting them better. By the end of spring, this staff needs to know who they have that can play in games at that particular point. That's their number one job, getting them ready to play. And then know who can't help and where help is going to be needed. Let's talk a little bit more about the staff real quickly. Derek Ansley is the secondary coach. You would have to say that his assistant, tongue-in-cheek, is Jeremy Pruitt. Kevin Scherer, the inside linebacker. Tracy Rocker, the defensive line coach. Chris Rumpf, the outside linebacker coach. All four of these coaches know this defense that Jeremy Pruitt runs inside and out. They've worked with him. They've coached it at other schools. And they know this league offensively. Jim Chaney is the what we call a walking coordinator. Doesn't really have a position that he coaches every day. I'm sure he'll be working with every one of them. Chris Winkie, as we mentioned last week, is the quarterback coach. T. Martin, the wide receiver coach. David Johnson, the running back coach. Will Friend, the offensive line coach. And Brian Niedermeyer, the tight end, and also works with the offensive line and assistant assistant. That's part of his job, too, is an assistant line coach, working with Will Friend. Here's the question that I have with this staff, and something that doesn't, well, it makes sense right now, but I don't see this going forward. How long is Coach Jeremy Pruitt going to keep a staff with six offensive coaches and four defensive assistants? Coaching the secondary now involves five starting positions. It's no longer a four starting position. There are five of the 11 are starting that start are defensive backs in the nickel. Everybody's playing the nickel now. That's our base defense because of the offenses we're going to see. Coach Jeremy Pruitt has one secondary coach full-time on this staff. May have a grad assistant that I'm not aware of, but grad assistants are just that, grad assistant. He has one full-time secondary coach, and that's Derek Ansley. He also, of course, Derek Ansley, Coach Ansley, is the defensive coordinator. So while Coach Jeremy Pruitt can help and certainly will, the reason that Derek Ansley was, Coach Ansley was brought in was to, quote, free Coach Pruitt up, where he didn't have to be as involved, certainly in games, but also in practice on the defensive side of the ball, where he could watch more things. Last year he had, of course, Charles Kelly and Terry Fair last year. So here's what I expect and what I look for. Nobody's told me this, but I just don't see how Coach Pruitt is going to go into next fall, maybe even this spring, with only one secondary coach. I think he's going to have to hire, not have to, I think he's going to want to hire another secondary coach. You need two over there for a multitude of reasons. Again, he brought in Coach Ansley to free him up a little bit, and without having that extra coach over there in the secondary, working with the safeties, working with the corners, working with the nickels, whatever his assignment's going to be, Coach Pruitt works almost exclusively in practice, or did, and I think will continue to do it. That's what his boss at Alabama does with the cornerbacks. So anyway, I look for another secondary coach to hire. That means somebody's going to be leaving, and probably if you look at who's coaching what, you can probably figure that out. Now, I could be wrong on that. I just don't see, doesn't make, I don't mean this in a negative standpoint, but to me, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to have six offensive coaches and four defensive coaches. And none of those offensive coaches have coached defense. It's not like you can move somebody over there. So that's kind of what the coaching staff is looking like. Again, the more that I look at it, the more that I talk to coaches in this league still coaching who know the guys, the more impressed I am with what's happening in the change this year. Coach Pruitt was not able to get everybody. He was able to bring them in, but not able to get everybody he wanted last year. I think he's much, much, much closer to that right now, and I think we're going to see big dividends on this. Listen, adding T. Martin as a coach, forget about everything else. At this point now, we're not worried about recruiting. Recruiting's over for the 2019 season. There's nobody that can be brought in. Maybe there's another scholarship that might be given. I don't know. But there's nobody that's going to be brought in that's going to help this team next year. So now we're in a coaching mode. We're in a getting better mode. We're in improving the techniques mode. We being the University of Tennessee coaching staff, they start with a big advantage from last spring. Last spring they come in and nobody they working with knew anything other than a few little meetings. And they certainly didn't know a whole lot about them. That's changed now. This staff, for the most part, a couple of new additions, and they'll catch on quickly. And more importantly, this head coach knows the players. And he knows, has a pretty good idea of what most of them can do. Yeah, there's going to be some development from strength and all those things, but he knows their athletic ability. He knows their intelligence. One quick thing on that. One of the things that I heard him say several times was he talked about the academic and how smart. I don't think he was using smart as intelligent, although that's part of it. He believes he brought in a lot of smart football players, smart guys, good students, but also smart football guys. The other thing he emphasized, and if you've heard him in the past, he's talked a lot about this, he likes players who have played on winning teams and on championship teams. I haven't gone down the list here, but he mentioned several players who have done that. So we now switch as a staff to getting ready for spring and getting these players ready for spring. Let's kind of take a look at what we have now with the 10 early enrollees, what we have as a football team program now that we'll be going through spring. 19 scholarship seniors, and if you take a look down there, folks, there's really only probably 10 or 11 that's going to end up in the two deep, if that many. Not many, and on the defensive side of the ball, probably more than most. I may have missed somebody here, but Gooden at defensive line, Taylored outside linebacker, Kirkland Jr., Batuli inside linebacker, Warrior and Buchanan, that's about it. All those guys have played, and certainly will be playing, you would think. But that's not many seniors. And on the offensive side, zero quarterbacks are seniors. One running back, that's Fields to me. He's going to be fourth team. You got Callaway and Jennings at wide receiver. Bird and Johnson, those are all seniors. Tied in, you got Wood Anderson. You got Pope and Blakely. They haven't played much, probably won't play much. Offensive line, you got Kennedy and Tatum and Niehaus and Brooks. Don't expect any more than probably Kennedy to play there. So we're going to be looking at a completely different spring practice this year. Let's talk about some of the keys. I'm going to leave off, and it's not that I'm leaving them off, but we know about what player, we know what Kirkland Jr. could do, what Batuli could do, what Kawarrior could do. I'm not going to talk about them. I will say this. I see where or hear from people who I think are dismissing Kirkland Jr. in particular and Batuli. Both these guys should be healthy, 100% healthy. If Daniel Batuli is 100% healthy, he's going to be a very fine linebacker. I really like him. He was one. He wasn't completely healthy last year. Now, maybe he won't be able to get back to 100%. If not, probably somebody is going to move in there and play more snaps. Let's talk about key players, and we're going to start with the linebackers. Three, let's take a look at what this linebacker group can look. We're going to play with three. There's actually nine players on campus right now that are linebackers. We got Batuli and Kirkland Jr. and Taylor. There's three seniors. Let's just for the sake of it say we're going to start spring practice with our seniors as our starters. Batuli and Kirkland, the two inside guys. Taylor, the outside guy. Again, we're a nickel defense. We don't play four linebackers anymore. We got three juniors who have played some. Ignat, Allen, and Johnson. None have distinguished themselves, probably Ignat more than the others, but Johnson's also played well. Allen was a junior college player who looks to have the physical ability. But then the three guys, though, and I'm going to put Jeremy Banks at linebacker. I don't know if that's officially been made. I just don't see how he will not be a linebacker this spring. I could be wrong. Three young guys there that have a tremendous upside. Banks and Crouch an early enrollee. They can run. They were running backs also. I hate to compare anybody to Al Wilson, but that was the type of player they were in high school. Physical running backs, physical, sudden, quick, explosive linebackers. And then J.J. Peterson. He was brought in last year for some reason, highly recruited, highly thought of at a program that Coach Pruitt knew exceptionally well. So that's nine linebackers. That's a three deep at three positions. And, of course, again, we're not going to talk about the freshman coming in. We know we have a highly rated one coming in the fall. So keys, Banks, Peterson, and Crouch. What can you learn? What can you do? Defensive backs, much the same. You got Fields, you got Brunell, and you got McCullough coming in, freshman there. And then how is Thompson, Taylor, Flowers, three freshmen that are going to be sophomores that had to play last year, and Theo Jackson, how are they going to develop? Again, I'm leaving off players that have been there that we pretty much know what they can do. Those are two key areas for spring. And if that linebacker group improves, and I see no way it won't, both in athletic ability, in knowledge of knowing the defense, and of the coaches knowing them, and if that secondary improves, which I don't see any way it won't, we played a lot of the year last year with young, inexperienced players, this defensive team could be significantly better next fall because we have some depth there. Offensive line is another area. Again, the guys who have played, won't be talking, but here's who needs to step up. And when I don't like the word step up. Here's who needs to be coached up and who needs to want to play. Carvin and Locklear and Lane and Calbert. Those are all four young guys that have shown flashes, Carvin the most of those. They've had an off season. They've had a strength program. They need to step up and be coached up where they can be big contributors next fall. There are some wide open spaces for some offensive linemen if they want to get out there and be a starter. You had those two freshmen, early enrollees coming in, Morris and Porgini coming in. That's another area to look at. Tight end. We know what Wood Anderson can do. Wood Anderson is a good tight end. This offensive coordinator and this head coach wants to be able to have a tight end, not a H-back. There's a big difference that can knock people off the ball. We've seen Wood Anderson do that. Can Bumpus get there? Showed signs of it. And then, of course, the low youngster coming in as an early enrollee. Quarterback, pretty much said about who they are. We got three of them. Garantano, he's going to be there. He's the starter. You got two freshmen, one redshirted, one coming in early, Maurer and Shrout. That's who they're going to be. Running backs, you got three. You got Chandler, you got Jordan, you got Eric Gray, you got a couple of other guys, feels to me serviceable. Pretty good looking guys to me. We haven't seen Eric Gray play in college. I watched him play two ball games personally in high school. The guy's a speedster. Defensive line, got a few problems there from a depth standpoint. Getting one of the transfers in early, the Solomon kid, he's in early. Maybe getting him eligible. I'm going to end with that. I've kind of run out of time, and I want to get to some basketball here. But just real quickly on D'Angelo Gibbs and Aubrey Solomon, two transfers that by law, rule, I guess it's not NCAA doesn't make laws yet, but by rules, should set out next year. There's been such a liberalization of the transfer waiver. About six out of ten that apply for it are becoming eligible. That's pretty good odds. Now, I don't know the exact circumstances. I'm sure they are appealing it. Coach Pruitt has at times sounded pretty optimistic on it, but I don't think there's anything concrete there. All right, new staff, all set. Coach Pruitt made the changes that he felt need to be made. We'll see if there's not one other change there coming at some point. We know who the players are that are going to be here for spring. We got 10 early enrollees to get a good look at. I'm assuming that everybody, until I hear a difference, is going to be there from a health standpoint. I haven't heard if Trey Smith is not going to be there. Nope. I'm counting everybody just like when I was coaching. If they're on the roster, and he's on the roster, I'm going to plan on him playing. Again, we'll find out more about that later. All right, take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk to Billy the Legend. What happened in Rupp? I don't know the big surprise, losing to Rupp or losing to Kentucky in Lexington, but Bill's going to analyze it when we come back. I'll talk to you about Double Dogs family-oriented sports bar, two of them right here in Nashville, all around the area up in Bowling Green, but Hillsborough Village and out on Charlotte Pike. It's a family-oriented sports bar. You can take your whole family in there and enjoy, well, great sports on TV, great signature food, a lot of fun, salads, burgers, sandwiches, pizza. They got the signature mac and cheese dishes. They also have five different hot dog dishes, if that is your fancy. They got the Double Dog's famous milkshake and, of course, adult beverages if you choose to abide there. DoubleDogs.biz, that's the website for Double Dogs, the local family-oriented sports bar.
Coffee-cured filet, ribeye, New York strip, steak and biscuits, slow-roasted prime rib. At Stony River Steakhouse and Grill, we take dining seriously. Enjoy our daily selection of fresh seafood entrees and choose from our award-winning wine list with over 30 wines by the glass. Savor a culinary experience to remember at Stony River in two Nashville area locations, West End Avenue and Galleria Boulevard in Franklin.
Hi, this is Todd Tressler with Tressler & Associates, here to thank everyone who has made our firm a success. We've grown from focusing on real estate to a firm of 18 concentrating on almost every aspect of the law. With deep roots in Middle Tennessee, our firm is committed to securing peace of mind for residents of our area. Because we consider ourselves a family at Tressler, we are fully committed to you and your family no matter what life throws at you. When you need help, visit TresslerAssociates.com. Tressler & Associates, securing your peace of mind.
When it comes to home field advantage, the two words you need to know are Neyland Stadium. And when you're talking dental insurance advantage, the two words to know are Delta Dental. And know is sure to bring a smile to your face, as in no hassles, no surprises, no special ID cards required. Want to know more? Visit them online at DeltaDentalTN.com. Delta Dental of Tennessee. Dental made simple.
At Lazy Boy Furniture Gallery, you'll be blown away by the huge selection of Lazy Boy recliners in fabric and leather, but also by the sofas, sleep sofas, sectionals, and motion upholstery. And if you need help designing an entire room around Lazy Boy furniture, we've got a home design program, and we'll come to your house and put it all together free. I'm Mike Keith, encouraging you to check out any of the three area Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries, Cool Springs, Hendersonville, and now in Murfreesboro at Medical Center Parkway in front of Embassy Suites.
104.5 The Zone, now available for your Amazon Echo device. To enable, just say, Alexa, enable the 104.5 The Zone skill. Then to play us, just say, Alexa, play 104.5 The Zone. Now, Big Orange Sunday continues with a complete breakdown of Vols basketball from Bill Justice. Presented by Double Dog's family-oriented sports bar at Hillsborough Village and Charlotte Pike.
Let's head up to Lexington, Kentucky. Bill Justice spent the night up there. Bill, I started the show by saying one of those nights in Lexington, we've seen a lot of teams go in there, walk out with an L. Let's get a little analysis on it. Let's start with this. From your perspective, what happened?
Well, let me start with a post-game and Rick Barnes' press conference here after the game.
I tell you what, Bill. Hold it. I got that clip I want to play, and then you touch on it. Ryan, we ready?
Very good. Let's do that.
All right.
Well, it was obviously pivotal, but what we wanted to do is just play together as a team and not try to do things one-on-one, and we just didn't do any of that. The first half, we didn't do the things that we really have done all year in terms of our offense, and I don't want to take anything away from Kentucky. I thought they were terrific. I thought John had his team ready to play, and they played great. They, you look at the stat sheet, they dominated us every way you can be dominated. But all we wanted to do was try to get ourselves playing together, and we just didn't do that. I thought it was the most selfish that we've been all year.
Bill, two words there, and then you take it. Dominated by them and selfish by us. Okay.
Yeah, and when I sat and watched the game, I was, being more critical than I was when I relaxed a little bit after game and realized that, hey, we were totally outplayed. Kentucky was the better team, and by far, and Coach Barnes in his comments also mentioned that, for all of Tennessee's shortcomings, there weren't any excuses or denials. The better team won that game. Don Calipari had his team ready, and they just dominated it. You know, when he said they were selfish and didn't play like we have been. One of the things he also said in there was, and we didn't have that on the tape, was that our pace offensively in this game was not what it has been. And he said, and it was really the fact that Jordan Bone was a little reluctant to run the ball down the floor against this defense. And he said, it wasn't the rest of the guys. He said, they run as Jordan Bone runs. If he gets down the floor fast, they're going to be down there with him. And he said, we did not beat their defense back. Too many times they were set up, and Tennessee simply could not make shots. When you shoot the poor percentage that they did, Turner and Bowden, 0-for-11 on threes. They shot 25% for the night, 28% for the night as a team, 40% from the field, and those numbers had been 50 and 42. So Tennessee just couldn't score the ball.
Well, you look at you throw Adam Schofield in there. They were 1-for-17.
Yeah,
from 3-point line. Bill, explain something to us. You use these three numbers all the time. It took me, my math skills aren't real good. It took me a little while. You mentioned the three numbers, and last night I'm going to give them 41, 28, 78. I think you're talking about the 41 field goal percentage, 3-point field goal percentage, and free throw percentage, correct?
That is correct. Absolutely.
All right, tell us about that. Where should it be just to be able to have a chance to win? 41 field goal last night, 28 3-point percentage, and 78 free throw shooting.
Tennessee has been 51, 36, and 77. The 36 is a good number. It's not great, but it's certainly good. And we've mentioned before, do the math, 33% on a three-pointer is, on three-point shots, is as good as 50% on two-point shots. And Kentucky, on the other hand, had been, you know, on the season 48, 35, 75. So they're not a bad shooting team. And last night, they topped that. They also held Tennessee to a low in terms of points scored. And when you can't score the ball, that's kind of what you'll come up with. Let me mention this after all these things we've talked about and what we have to come. This is a key play from what I looked at before, you know, during the game and then after. 7 seconds left in the first half, and Kentucky has the ball. They're up by four. They give the ball to Hagans. He takes it the length of the floor, unguarded. Nobody's even close. Scores an uncontested layup, and they go up by seven. Buzzer sounds, you go to the halftime. The problem is, they go up by six. The problem is, most importantly, the UK crowd explodes when they get that last second basket. They're celebrating, and they celebrate for 20 minutes at halftime instead of going quietly to the break. They come out after halftime, score 14 straight to open up in the first 4 minutes of the second half. Tennessee goes scoreless in that time. And basically, from that shot that Tennessee didn't guard, they should have gone zone to give them a different look, and they did later in the game. Unguarded, and a celebration, 14 straight, game's over.
Kentucky led by 24 in the second half, of course, ended winning by, 17?
Tennessee made a little run at them there to get, to get it down close to double digits. Could have had a bucket, get it down into six or seven. Couldn't do that. They ran out of gas, and Kentucky built the lead back up.
Bill, you've heard me talk so much in football about games and teams don't get their players, the playmakers, the ball. I guess the stat that everybody that I know is talking about, Grant Williams, 4 field goal attempts in 35 minutes. That's one every 8.5 minutes. Now, I don't know what they kind of consider that. He ended up shooting 9 free throws, so obviously he had the ball and something was happening. Is that where the selfish comment comes from, you think?
Yeah, and I tell you, the other thing that they did, it was obvious that Kentucky had a game plan to make sure that Schofield and Grant were contested. They even doubled down on them. And when they did, they made a decision that we will sacrifice the possibility of the three-point shots by Tennessee's perimeter players, Lamonte Turner, Jordan Bone, and Jordan Bowden, and we will take our chances that we can guard those guys down low, make them get the ball out of their hands, or better still, just deny it getting into them. So they doubled down on Grant and Admiral almost every time they got it in, and they had to pass it back out. And that's what I said. We could not make shots when you go with that kind of a 5-6% from three-point line on your guys that are basically pretty open. A guy running at them, but pretty open. You don't make shots, you don't win.
Bill, let's talk, analyze this a little bit. I'm assuming you think probably Kentucky, Tennessee, the two best teams in the Southeastern Conference. With that assumption, talk a little about how they compare. You've been saying all along from the get-go that Kentucky would be a very good team when you get to the end of the year. Where have you seen there? And then can you put your finger on any one thing? You mentioned Jordan Bone. Not only you, but every analyst that I listen to on that has anything to do with college football or college basketball, if he's not the best point guard, best guard in the country, he's right up there, 1, 2, or 3. Can you put your finger on anything on why he didn't do what he is so capable of doing? And that one of his strengths is getting the ball up the court. You mentioned that often.
And his vision is great. And I think for some reason last night that he was seeing things differently. And I'll give Kentucky the credit there. They were spreading back out in their man-to-man defense. And it looked like that the Kentucky players were already back in position, and there was no way to outrun them down the floor. Even if he got past the guy guarding him man-to-man out front or full court. And plus the other fact is, what a lot of other teams have done is they have tried to pressure him. They've tried to get on him and guard him with his ball, with his hand on the ball coming down the floor, and he's too quick. He runs by them. They fell back off of him. They didn't let him blow by the man guarding him, so they would fade back. They didn't double-team. They didn't trap. They just dropped back quickly, And I think when his eyes looked down the floor, he saw a defense that was already set. So in his mind, he said, we've got to go set offense. And that was where Coach Barnes was saying, he's got to go ahead and bring it. And that way our guys will be dropped back in scoring position and offense ready to set the offense in motion instead of having to come into half court and then start the offense. Kentucky did a great job defensively of taking away what Tennessee has done so well. Tennessee went in averaging 86 points a game, and they didn't get close to that because they didn't have any pace.
A couple of questions before we go to break, and then we'll continue kind of looking at this game and then what the road ahead is. Pretty tough schedule the rest of the way through on this. Bill, the game plan going in, I know you've had some conversation. What do you think Tennessee wanted to do offensively in this game?
I think they probably – why would you – you know, we've talked about this in circles up here during the game and after the game with some friends here from both sides of the fence, from both teams here. And I think with Tennessee, the streak they're on, it's not like you're going to go in and tweak your whole program. You have practiced what you do, and you work on it every day, and you try to get better. And you go in and you use a lot of film study, and you do a lot of work to see what will apply to this particular team this week. And when you look at Kentucky, they're a different team than anybody has played this far. They have got more size. They've got better talent. They've got a tremendous home floor advantage that Tennessee won't run into anywhere unless they end up playing at Duke, which they don't do. So you had a lot of things where you have to plan for a little bit different from that game. And yet, as a coach, as a player, you pattern it for this particular game, not as much as you do football, because in basketball, what you've been doing in your game plan, especially offensively, is not going to change. You got to go to Schofield. You got to go to Grant Williams. Kentucky came in and took that completely away from them and made the perimeter shooters unreliable and able to score the ball, simply could not shoot it.
Got to believe that the experience of Rick Barnes, he'd been through this, I'm sure, before, probably more times than he would like to think in the, 24, 25, 26 years he's coached. We'll talk with Bill about that when we come back as we go to break. Let me talk to you about American Home Design. AmericanHomeDesign.com. That's the place to go to find out all about them. They're also, of course, up in the Goodlettsville area. But what they're looking for right now, they got a big need for people to help them stay Nashville's number one home improvement company. Outside sales reps, lead generating reps, inside phone sales, installers, just some of the areas that they need full-time and also part-time. Full-time employees, 3 weeks paid vacation, 9 paid holidays, health insurance benefits, competitive salaries, a 401k profit-sharing plan. Excellent company, stable company, 40-plus years owned by the same folks. If you're interested, if you want to talk to them about joining their team, 615-361-6100. Ask for Anita. You can also on their website, AmericanHomeDesignJobs.com. But again, call them, 615-361-6100, and ask for Anita.
A great home buying experience can only happen with the right financing, and that's why Wilson Bank and Trust takes so much joy in helping our neighbors with reliable, fast mortgage loans. We'll work to find the perfect loan option for you and your budget, and then make things as simple as possible, from application to underwriting to closing. Come see a lender at any of our 28 full-service Wilson Bank and Trust locations in Middle Tennessee, or visit wilsonbank.com, and let's find the loan you need to make that new home happen. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
I love my community, and as a doting dad,
Daddy's home,
a devoted son,
there you are, Joe,
and a good neighbor,
hey man,
the people in my life are used to hearing my knock at the door. But as a law enforcement officer, I have to give news that people never expect. That's the one knock I always dread.
Booze it and lose it. A message from the Tennessee Highway Safety Office.
Same Mid-South Business Furniture, brand spanking new location to better serve our customers. 1830 Air Lane Drive, Suite 13 is our new home. And right now, great deals with savings of up to 70% on all excess desks, chairs, filing cabinets, etc. Visit us on the web at MidSouthBusinessFurniture.com or stop by 1830 Airline Drive, Suite 13 and take advantage of our great deals.
Mid-South Business Furniture, Mid-South Business Furniture, Mid-South Business Furniture.
Stover's Liquidation's crushing it with great deals like luxury vinyl plank, 100% waterproof, many styles, all for just 69 cents per square foot. Solid hickory saddle, just $3.59 a square foot. Nobody stocks more plank look porcelain tile than Stover's Liquidation. Hundreds of selections, just 99 cents per square foot. And a huge selection of porcelain tile, just 69 cents a square foot every day. So visit Stover's Liquidation, 12966 Old Hickory Boulevard, Antioch, or online at stoversliquidation.com. Stover's.
Every player has a draft day story.
The Tennessee Titans select.
This is running back Lindell White, and this is my draft story. I was in Park Hill at the recreation center I grew up playing football at. Norm Chow called, you know, it's the Titans, and he's like, we're taking you with the next pick. And, you know, I just remember throwing the phone down and started crying. When it finally, your name gets called, and you see it go across the screen, there was nothing better than that.
The 2019 NFL Draft, coming April 25th on the home of Titans Radio, 104.5. The Zone. Now, Big Orange Sunday continues with a complete breakdown of Vols basketball from Bill Justice. Presented by Double Dog's family-oriented sports bar at Hillsborough Village and Charlotte Pike.
Bill Justice with us. We're talking basketball. Bill, I was kind of looking at the minutes played thing here. One of the things, and I'm sure basketball is exactly the same. You know, when you play in a big game in football, your players play. You talk in the staff room, and I'm sure this happens in basketball, but as you talk around the staff on the Thursday getting ready for the ball game, you talk about who you're going to play in the ball game to the head coach. I can tell you this, when I was at Tennessee, if we were playing Citadel, the guys that I suggested playing was a good bit different than the ones that when we were playing Alabama, and the head coach also took a little different view of it. Kind of looking at it, what kind of look jumped to me? Kentucky, five starters, 32 minutes. He only had one other guy that played double-digit minutes. Tennessee, much the same. Jordan Bowden, who's played a lot anyway. Kyle Alexander, I'm assuming because of foul problem, was on the bench a good bit. So it really got down to about five guys playing against five guys. That's not unusual in big ball games, I don't think.
Yeah, you know, we've talked about that before. How deep can you go? And you look at kind of double digit minutes played, and that has become more and more a longer list of guys on teams. Normally, eight and even nine guys will average double digit minutes. As you get on into the season, and even though there's several games left, this type of game, a two ranked teams, one versus four, you're going to change those minutes up. You're going to make sure your guys come into the game fresh. And if you've got a great player who's been playing 28, chances are he's going to go 32, 33, 34. Tennessee, I haven't seen Kentucky enough to know their rotation, but I know Tennessee's rotation minutes-wise and when they take out. Let's assume no foul trouble. They try to have one of Williams or Schofield on the floor at all times. They're going to try to have Alexander or Fulkerson on the floor at all times. They like the three-guard offensive guys, which is Bone and Turner and
Bowden.
Bowden. And so those three guys on the floor most of the time, even though Yves Fons, they'll put in as a defensive stopper. So rotation minutes, as you get into a game like Kentucky, you get into the SEC tournament, certainly in the NCAA tournament, those guys are going to be staying on the floor longer. There's not a big thing about that, Doug, unless it's just an up-and-down crazy pace. You got to remember, these are world-class fitness guys that are 18 to 22 years old. They certainly can go out there and play hard for, you know, 32 minutes a game.
You got a lot of timeout possibilities with
absolutely
the TV.
A lot of ball stoppage, out of bounds, free throws. It doesn't take these guys long to get their breath back.
Talking about free throws, 33 to 18 attempts. I know some people, you know, somebody's always going to have a reason for why the refs cost them a game. I don't know about that, but Is that a little unusual for this Tennessee team? And I ask it for this reason. I just watching games, and I've certainly felt this way in coaching football games. I like to see them let them play pretty much, unless it's pretty significant. Pretty good job of the officials from that standpoint, letting them play.
Tennessee had 25 fouls. Kentucky had 15. That's too big a discrepancy. That's not officiating. That's not home court advantage. It's just the fact that Tennessee was playing from behind, and they were playing scrap basketball. They just did not play a good disciplined game. And being fouled too much means your defense is out of position. You're just too out of position. They had two guys foul out, which is very unusual. They got nothing out of Kyle Alexander. Because he stayed in foul trouble all night. So, a little unusual to have 10 more fouls than the other team, but looking at the score and how that game went, I don't think it had anything to do with officiating. I think it had to do with Tennessee just having sloppy play.
All right, let's talk about going forward here. This team's going to switch venues here in the not too distant future. LSU coming, playing very well. Tennessee closes with a tough, tough schedule. Let's talk a little bit about where the improvement needs to come quickly, and from what we've seen so far, you would expect it to come quickly, I would assume.
Yeah, and if you look at the schedule, we'll run through it. They have Vanderbilt at home, then they go to LSU. They're ranked inside the top 20. To Auburn, they were ranked. Kentucky in Knoxville. Mississippi State, another ranked team. At Auburn, at Ole Miss. They have got the toughest part of their schedule left to go. We said before the Kentucky game it would be probably an expectation that wouldn't be met for Tennessee to go undefeated the rest of the way through the SEC. But when you take Tennessee and Kentucky, if you looked at Kentucky's schedule, I don't have it in front of me, but I have been over it with some people. By far, their toughest game is Knoxville. They don't have anywhere near the challenging schedule that Tennessee does. And right now, Tennessee's got that one-game lead on them, but it's going to be very hard for them to protect that with the schedule that they have. Obviously, the game in Knoxville will be a focus, and I expect Tennessee to play much better when they play that game. But they've got just a tough schedule with those road games against ranked teams.
Veteran team, that's always a plus. Veteran coach, that's always a plus. I didn't listen to his whole press conference. I didn't listen to it last night. I listened to it today when I was getting ready for the show. It kind of what you expect out of Rick Barnes, I think, praising the other team. Kentucky played well. You mentioned that, and I'm sure that after what happened with LSU, they probably had a little bit more added incentive if they needed that. I mentioned a while ago the two best teams in this conference, and Bill, nationwide, you got both of them up there still in the top 4, 5, 6.
I don't know if Tennessee will stay in the top 4, 5, 6, and
I don't mean where they're ranked. I'm just talking about where it all ends up when we get to tournament time.
Are you talking about all the way through the SEC tournament?
Yeah, I'm just talking about not where they're going to end up. Just from a team concept, you still have them right up there with anybody else in the country.
The Tennessee Kentucky teams are both going to be in the NCAA tournament, and they'll both be seeded very high. They will be certainly seated in the top 8. One of the two will probably be in the top 4. So, yeah, both of these teams are still going to be highly respected. Tennessee's got the harder path because I think their schedule left to go is tougher. We're going to see a lot about. I think this team is tough. I think they're strong. I think Rick Barnes is going to coach them back in the right direction. Hey, they've been too good this year up until last night when they were outplayed and out-hustled. But they've been too good this year to think, well, they weren't as good as we thought we did. That's what other people are saying. That's not true. This is still an excellent basketball team. It's still a team that's going to win a lot of basketball games. They're going to go into the postseason. They're going to look at the film. They're going to correct the mistakes. This game is over. They're not talking about this in the locker room at Tennessee, in the meeting room at Tennessee. They're getting ready for Vanderbilt this week and the schedule ahead. Next game up.
Speaking of Vanderbilt, it kind of reminded me of the Vanderbilt game here that you and I watched. Who would have thought at the end of that ball game that Vanderbilt, what are they, 0-11 now in the league?
Yeah, they have
0-10 and 1-1. And Tennessee bounced back from that. It won the ball game, but certainly had a lot of opportunities to lose that one. Take our last break, come back, and we're going to talk to Bill about kind of the national picture and also a few other things concerning the University of Tennessee basketball program. Mid-10 Ford is a company, I said this many times, I've been in Big Orange Center, I don't know, 26, 27 years in some form at two different radio stations, WLAC, back with Bob Bell. We started that about 26 years ago, I guess now, 12 weeks. First sponsor, first show was Bill Boyd and Mid-10 Ford. They are still on, and they are still doing a great job, the Boyd family. Mr. Bill is not with us any longer, but the family, is it still a Boyd operation? They got everybody in there seemingly as a Boyd. And they do tremendous. If you're a truck person, then you're probably a Ford truck person. And if you're a Ford truck person, you are certainly a mid-10 Ford truck person. That's what their specialty is, Ford trucks. They can work on them. They can paint them. They can fix them. They can sell them. They can do whatever you need done to it. They have a parts department that has over $1 million in parts in stock at all times. That means heavy trucks, big heavy-duty trucks, any of the trucks, even automobiles, they can probably get it done. They work on my automobile. They can probably get it done. Well, if not the next day, they'll have that part in there the next day. Mid10trucks.com. Check out everything that they have to offer this outstanding Middle Tennessee company.
71 degrees all the way.
73 degrees, please.
So what's your perfect degree of comfort? We'll help you find it with professional Rheem HVAC service that'll keep your home comfy year-round, save on energy costs, and may qualify for utility rebates and tax credits. So enjoy a new degree of comfort.
72 degrees, and I'm good to go.
Count on Rheem to provide great service on all brands of equipment. Visit Rheem.com to locate a Rheem dealer near you.
I don't know much about tires other than the fact that I need four of them to drive around. I do, however, know Bruce Rather at Tire World, and when my car needs tires and alignment, an oil change, or a problem diagnosed, Bruce gets a call from me. For 35-plus years, Tire World has been a staple in Rutherford County. They have locations in Murfreesboro, Smyrna, Laverne, and Chapel Hill. So for most any kind of tires at great prices, go see Bruce at Tire World and look him up at tireworld.us.
What if I told you that 15 minutes on a new fitness technology called Mandu would produce the same strength and fitness results as 6 to 8 hours of lifting weights? EMS, or electrical muscle stimulation, has been popular for years in Europe, and after recent approval from the FDA, it's being offered to Middle Tennesseans. Mandu uses a small electrical current to tighten and strengthen your muscles as you perform a series of flexing and stretching moves. Get all the information on this new exciting technology at Mandu.com. MANDUU.com.
This is Doug Matthews.
And this is Dave McGinnis.
Did you know Medicare has a co-insurance and deductibles and doesn't cover prescription drugs?
And traditional Medicare doesn't provide dental or vision coverage.
Well, that's why I have my Medicare supplement and Part D plan through Farm Bureau Health Plans.
And why I bought their Dental Vision Silver plan.
Farm Bureau Health Plans has been serving Tennesseans since 1947.
And because they're right here in Columbia, Tennessee, you've definitely got the home field advantage.
Farm Bureau Health has you covered at FB Health Plans.com.
Music City has a front row seat to all the action. Hey, I'm Logan Ryan, and the 2019 NFL Draft happens here on 104.5 The Zone.
Now, Big Orange Sunday continues with a complete breakdown of Vols basketball from Bill Justice, presented by Double Dog's family-oriented sports bar at Hillsborough Village and Sharp Pike.
Talking ball basketball with Billy the Legend. Bill, Tennessee hammered in the rebound department. Some of that had to be because of Kyle Alexander. Only 18 minutes, only three total rebounds, one defensive rebound. If looking at it outside in from someone that's not a basketball guy, that appears to be the one area when he gets in trouble. Fulkerson is a serviceable player. From what I've seen of him, it's tough for him to play in a game like this. So how key is Alexander staying out of foul trouble? And can he do it? Because that's kind of what he does.
Well, he's a shot blocker, and that's where he gets in foul trouble. And against Kentucky, they're very physical and very good in size. When you look at them, they don't appear on television as big as they are, but they're very strong inside. Reed Travis is physical of players there is in the league. E.J. Montgomery at 6'10". P.J. Washington, a great player. He's 6'8". They're big, and they're physical, And if you put Tennessee in the game with their five against Kentucky's five, Kentucky's a more physical team, and that's why they're able to go down low, handle Tennessee's inside scores, and make Tennessee beat them from the outside. That was the game plan going in. They executed it very well.
All right, let's look at the rest of the league from what you've seen now. We've talked Kentucky. We've talked Tennessee. Auburn seems to be playing better here lately. LSU, I guess, the team right now that's hot. And, of course, Mississippi State, as you said, although they had a loss also.
And LSU at Georgia, you know, what'd they win by? Three? I think I saw it was a very close score. So I still don't know how good they are. I do know that they won at Kentucky, and that's big, although Kentucky people would tell you it was a bad call at the end, and I think it was. I still think, you know, that Tennessee and Kentucky in one order or the other are by far the best two teams in the league. After that, I think you can bundle Auburn, LSU, probably Mississippi State, and pick out the next players that you think are really good there. One of the things I'm going to be interested in is just how, as the season goes to the end, all the way through the SEC tournament, how does the selection committee view the SEC this year? After last year getting so many in, what do we get through this year? But I think in the Southeastern Conference, these last few games are going to separate the top half of the league from the bottom half of the league, and it's going to be a lot more clear, and it should be, as we head into the SEC tournament.
And I don't know, do you, as a league, numbers is one thing, but seeding is as much, you know, if you're seeded in what, 6, 7, 8 in there, I don't know that that's significant. It looks to me like, right. And again, from listening to you, there's probably more higher seeded teams this year that are going to be in the conference, in tournament.
Yeah, I think you're talking about from the SEC.
Right.
Well, I think you're exactly right, and you start with those top two teams. And, I go back to this. I think this is one loss for Tennessee, way more points than we might have thought. Kentucky was a favorite in this game, partially because of the crowd and being on the road for Tennessee, but Tennessee's reacted to that in the past. These two teams are going to be very highly ranked. They're going to be seeded teams. They're going to be teams expected to make it to that last weekend, I think, in the tournament, especially if they play through the rest of the season like they have. After that, I think you've got a half a dozen teams that have a chance to be in the tournament and to be able to do some advancement, win a couple of games. To look at anybody in this league and say you've got potential to travel far in it and make a Final Four or even an Elite Eight past Kentucky and Tennessee probably is a stretch when you look at what the rest of the country's like and what the top teams are like.
Well, we're only really worried about one team getting in and what they're going to be doing, and that's why
that's especially true on Big Orange Sunday.
I was going to say that's why the name of the show is Big Orange Sunday. Billy, thanks so much. Have a safe trip back. I guess you come back today, huh?
Yeah, I'll be getting back in this afternoon. I'll spend a few more minutes up here in Lexington and then head back and get ready for the next week for Tennessee basketball.
Good enough. Bill Justice with us every Saturday and every Sunday, of course, talking SEC, nationally, of course, Big Orange Sunday, talking about the Vols. Thanks to Ryan Albanese for producing, you all for being part of the show. Everything's podcast. It'll be up in about 30 minutes at CoachDougMatthews.com. One T in Matthews if you missed any part of the show. A lot going on, a lot to talk about, and we'll be getting more about Tennessee football and basketball next Sunday on Big Orange Sunday.